Roku users are streaming almost 3 hours per day. Can Quibi content help it go even higher? Discovery Plus is here. Will it help boost Roku streaming time too? Listen on to find out.
And hello and welcome to our first podcast of 2021. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon joins me again, once again, for our next, our new year of podcasting together. Colin, Happy New Year to you. How's everything?
Everything is great. Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to our listeners. Yes, 2021. And boy, we've already got a whole bunch of stories to talk about today. And well, it looks like it's shaping up to be another busy year in online streaming. Why don't we talk about the pre-release of numbers from Roku that they gave today? Because that's sort of a really interesting window, I think, on where we are, right?
Yeah, I think it is a pretty interesting window, Colin. I agree with you. And as you said, Roku pre-announced a few select metrics from Q4 2020. The highlight of which is that they are over 50 million active accounts now as of December 31st. So more specifically, they're 51.2 million, and that's actually an increase of about 14.3 million during 2020. So they ended 2019 with 36.9 million. They added 14.3 million during 2020. And one other interesting point there is I went back and looked at 5 years ago, at the end of 2015, Anthony Wood wrote a blog post that he was pleased that they had ended 2015 with just over 9 million active accounts. So they're basically up 5x in active accounts in the past 5 years, and that's a pretty big accomplishment. So active accounts were up, and they're also up by 5.2 million in Q4 compared to the end of Q3. And no doubt that a big tailwind that Roku had during 2020 was COVID. We all know about the stay-at-home, the increase in streaming due to stay-at-home, and we've certainly talked about that many times during the course of 2020. They also no doubt benefited from adding HBO Max access in mid-December, and that was just ahead of sort of the last-minute holiday bump, people going out and buying TVs and players. And so that little bit of promotion no doubt helped them. And so overall, very, very successful year for Roku in terms of active accounts. We're going to dig into that a little bit more, but just as one segue, they also announced that their streaming hours, increased to 58.7 billion in 2020. That was about 51% higher than the 38.8 billion hours that viewers streamed in 2019. So streaming hours up, active accounts up, and I know you have done a little more analysis on the numbers and have a perspective as well. So what's your take?
I have, Will, and yeah, I think actually HBO Max was very important for Roku. I don't know about you, but I know what I did on Christmas Day was we sat down and we watched the Wonder Woman 1984, and I got to tell you, it was pretty good. There was just a couple of glitches, and of course, I was watching this through our Roku. And it worked really, really well. So I have a feeling that the availability of HBO Max was really important. The availability of Peacock, which was also signed quite late, was also very important, had a big impact on those numbers. So, yeah, in fact, as you said, 51.2 million, that's 39% up year over year, which is a pretty decent increase, 11% quarter over quarter. But as you said, the really interesting data was Roku gave the streaming hours that they delivered in Q4. And so I sort of multiply this out to try and figure out how much each individual active user is watching. And what that basically works out to is about 3 hours and 48 minutes a day. I should say, not really about, that's pretty much exactly what it is when you multiply that out. So that's a pretty big increase. That's an 11% increase year over year and a 5% increase over Q3. So people really did seem to use their Rokus a lot during that quarter. But I wanted to, I thought this would be interesting to sort of compare this with Nielsen viewing data for traditional television. And I was looking back at Nielsen's data for Q1 2020, which is the last data that I have. And they basically said that the average adult was watching about 4 hours and 16 minutes per day of live and time shifted television. And so, as I said, that the Roku numbers work out to about 3 hours and 48 minutes. But you got to be careful here because it's not quite the same thing. Because Roku is giving us per active user and Nielsen is giving us per adult. So there's about 2.5 people per home in the US these days. So that actually works out, the Roku number works out to about 1.5, 1.5 hours per day per user in an average home. But you have to be, again, this is very approximate because I've got a feeling there's a lot of joint viewing going on here. So that probably means that people are watching 2 or more hours per day through their Roku. So why am I going through all of this? Well, what this data really tells me is that in Roku homes, the Roku box is probably the most used television device for watching television in those homes. And that I think really gives you a good reflection of where we are in, well, what is it, 50 million homes, 51 million homes, the majority of which are here in the US because Roku is still just getting started outside of the US. So what that's saying is for, you know, 45 million homes in the US, that's maybe 40% of the television market now, Roku is the primary television device in those homes. And that I think is a pretty amazing statistic.
Yeah, I agree with you, Colin. And also, you have to believe that the streaming hours, the intensity of usage is also being driven up by people using virtual MVPD services. So they're, to some extent, replicating their traditional TV viewing, but using a Roku device or other devices for that matter, basically turning on the channel and just letting it play. You know, in some cases is, you know, ambient noise. And also the idea of binge viewing and auto playing of next episodes. So I think about, you know, The Office is now on Peacock and how many people are going to be just basically binge viewing one episode after another. And of course, that's just one example of so many different programs that are binge viewed. But all of that, I think, combines to increase the amount of time spent with Roku devices and with, you know, other connected TV devices, which I think is only going to continue in 2021 as more and more great content comes to streaming.
I do too, Will. There's a few reasons why. You know, one of the things that we've seen, I think, change dramatically over the past year is that now major content providers like Disney and Warner Media, they are really putting their best foot forward now online. Disney has made a huge commitment to provide a whole bunch of content for all their major franchises that will release first through Disney Plus. HBO Max is going to be releasing a ton of first run movies through their platform. They're also working on an ad-supported tier. Not quite sure if that's just going to be cheaper or free, but I think it's probably going to be a lot cheaper at first, at least. So that will help drive usage there. But so not only do you have to be watching streaming to be, quote, in the zeitgeist, as Ted Sarandis likes to say with Netflix, it looks like Netflix had a banner Q4 for delivery as well. Not only do you have to be streaming to be in that zeitgeist, it looks like that is going to increase dramatically this year as well. We've just seen the release of Discovery Plus, which we'll be getting to in a moment. And we'll see CBS All Access morph into Paramount Plus coming this year, with a whole bunch more CBS content coming out through there. CBS has just increased the number of channels it makes available to virtual MVPDs. They just signed an agreement with Hulu Live to provide a whole bunch more content there. I don't know about you, Will. I just see this year the real big growth. I don't know how Roku's going to do with active users, but usage, the number of streaming hours delivered and the amount watched per active user, I'm expecting to see really increase pretty dramatically here in the next year.
I think that's probably a pretty fair assumption. Again, tying back to your point about just the proliferation of high quality streaming content that's going to be available, and the major media companies that are leaning in so hard, as you mentioned, Disney for sure. We saw just a few weeks ago at their investor day what they're planning on investing this year in new content. But you know, HBO Max releasing all their films, I think the 17 or 18 2021 films, all on HBO Max day and date with the theaters. Again, thinking about Peacock and having all the seasons of The Office now and the original content on Netflix, the list goes on and on. So I hear you and I agree. I think that all bodes well for streaming. And actually, one little segue as we talk about original programming and Roku is that there's been rumors that they've been negotiating to buy Quibi's catalog. And I think you and I were talking about this a little bit before we started to record, but you know, there may be some specific issues with the Quibi content and the rights and everything else. But more broadly speaking, I think the idea of Roku having its own original content makes good sense. And we've seen this playbook from lots of the others active in the space. And Roku has a great ability to monetize content now on its platform. It is certainly held its own on the player and TV side, but it's a competitive space. So having some type of exclusive content, I think, would help on the hardware side and the device side. So I think there's good reason for Roku to dip its toe into the water for original content. But there are some wrinkles with Quibi, with the Quibi catalog, I know you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I was kind of scratching my head about this, Will. I couldn't make up my mind whether I think this is a good idea for Roku or not. The reason is that the Quibi catalog, you mentioned that there were some restrictions, and I was reading, I think it was a piece in Variety that was talking about some of the restrictions on what Quibi can do with that catalog. They didn't go the Netflix route where they actually own the content. They actually have licensed the content from the providers. And I think I saw, you know, 7 years for some of those contracts. And basically what that contract restricts them to do is only provide the content in episodes. So what that means is that if Roku picks up that content, they can't show it as a continuous movie. So for example, Free Ray Sean, which I really liked on Quibi a lot, was I think 10 episodes at 5 to 7 minutes each. They can't glam all those together into a single movie, which I think would play excellently, by the way. They can't do that with that license, and it also wasn't clear that which content was assignable, which content they could actually sell. I noticed in the list of content that I saw in Variety, they didn't mention The Dangerous Game, which also was very good and which was one of the pieces of content that they really led with. So that means that watching it on TV is going to be an interesting experience, because you'll basically be watching it in seven minute segments. But this might help Roku out in one area I think they're particularly weak, which is on mobile. They never really give us any information on how they're doing on mobile, and that is, I think, a very important component. Well, maybe this Quibi content could help get people using Roku on mobile a lot more than they are today, and really help reinvent the mobile app from people thinking it is just as a remote for using a Roku to actually being a deliverer of video content and help them in that transition, which I think is an important one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would help on the mobile side. I don't know if that's part of Roku's strategy or not. They really don't talk about mobile. They've been so focused on the TV. And so I don't know if that would be out of focus for them. And you know, your point on the licensing and what the rights would be for the playout, those points are well taken. And if those are restrictions, if those are hard restrictions, then I agree with you. I think that could be problematic. So we'll have to wait to see whether they are able to kind of work around those restrictions. I don't think showing 7-minute episodes on Roku players is necessarily a great strategy, a growth strategy for them. So wait and see. But, you know, even if the Quibi deal doesn't work out, it would not surprise me at all if we saw Roku take some steps in original content in 2021, because, as I said, you know, for the reasons I said before, I think that there are good competitive reasons for them to do so, and I think they have the capability, the strong capability, to be able to monetize. And so, you know, we've seen that playbook before. That's the name of the game. Once you have a user base, being able to show exclusive content is really critical.
Right. But, you know, one thing I think that really did, that probably is helping Roku a lot this year, is this release of Discovery Plus, which did come out on the, I think it came out yesterday on the 5th or maybe the 4th. Maybe it was the 5th.
On Monday. Yep.
Yeah. And we had talked about this before. Have you had a chance to have a look at it, Will?
I have not done the free trial yet of Discovery Plus, I'll admit. I will concede that Discovery Plus's content is not really a great match for me. I know that there are many, many fans, but it's not really a match for me. I know some of it, a slice of it, is of interest to you, and you did start a free subscription. So why don't you tell us a little about that experience and also whether you plan to go through the trial and actually become a paying subscriber.
Yeah, I did. I just signed up as soon as it was released yesterday, and I'm quite impressed with the app. If you have HBO Max, you're going to be very familiar with this app. I really like the way they've designed it. It has all the features that you're used to. It's got, you know, lots of categories. You can access the content by brand name, so there's a row of buttons that you can directly access the Home and Garden TV content, the food content, TLC, ID, OWN, etc., and also the Discovery Plus originals. So that's all to the good. The mobile app works really well. I really enjoyed the mobile app as well. However, I will say I was surprised. I can't believe that they released without download. I think that's a big hole. You can't download any of the content to the mobile app, which they're one of their biggest competitors, which is Curiosity Stream. You can do, and it works pretty darn well through the mobile app too. But as I say, I think the app is very performant. People will really like it. The price is pretty good: $4.99 with ads, $6.99 without ads. So that's sort of in the right ballpark, I think, for where they are and the content that they're offering. I do think. I think we talked about this before when we talked about Discovery Plus and what we were expecting. I think they have some problems because they don't have the latest episodes from their television channels. They do have originals, and that will help, I think, draw over some of the fans of some of the, you know, really big stars that they have, you know, the Gaineses and Bobby Flay and all of the rest. That will help draw people who are big fans of those. But I've got to tell you, Will, for me, there were a couple of things that really stuck out for me as I used the app and we watched some of the Home and Garden TV stuff. The first thing is that the ad-free experience was kind of weird. And let me explain what I mean. I was watching one of the Home and Garden shows, which we love, that type of content. And when you came to where the ad would have been, what they do, on when the ads are there is you finish the ad pod and then you go back into the show, and then they give you a sort of 15-20 second reprise of where they finished the previous section. Well, you don't need that if there were no ad there, and I found it really, really annoying that they were doing that ad post ad pod reprise of what had come before. So that I found really bothersome. The other thing was that I mentioned that we liked our home and garden type of stuff, and we've been watching a lot of content on YouTube. And I found myself actually preferring the shows in that category that I watch there. So, for example, we watch Bryce Langston and his Living Big in a Tiny House show series on YouTube. And I really like that format, and I really like Bryce, and I find I really relate well to the way he produces, and I like his like the way he handles that show. And I really didn't like the personalities that I was seeing present the shows on Home and Garden TV. And this I think highlights a real problem for Discovery, which is folks like me who have made that transition and now are native, have cut the cord and found different content. I don't know, they're going to have a tough time winning me back. I've got, you know, the cookery shows I like. There's a Gaz Oakley who's got a great cooking show on YouTube that my wife and I both enjoy. They're going to have a tough time winning us back, and that's why I think that they're going to have trouble recruiting paying subscribers. But they have done something which you noticed that should get them a bunch of people into the app, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, notwithstanding your concern there, I think on the content quality and maybe, you know, whether the personalities specifically appeal to you, they do have the Verizon deal, which we know is a big winner for Disney, and I think is likely to be a big winner for Discovery as well. They also announced earlier this week a slew of different agreements with various device makers, Roku included, and also a deal with Vodafone. So, you know, I think that Discovery's doing all the right things in terms of an aggressive distribution strategy for Disney, for Discovery Plus. And I think those alone, I wrote earlier this week about the value of distribution, even in a direct-to-consumer world. I think with those moves that Discovery has made, they're all but guaranteed to rack up a, you know, huge number, not a Disney Plus level number of subscribers, but I think a pretty successful 2021. Although your point, Colin, about the episode being recapped there in a non-ad supported world, that does sound like a not ready for prime time kind of approach, and sounds like they need to go back to the editing suite and clean those episodes up in order to appeal to people who are paying to avoid ads and obviously want to have the best content experience possible.
Yeah, I wrote about this week, and I forecast that the app, because of the restrictions of not having the latest content and the heavy competition from not only YouTube for free, but CuriosityStream. I mean, frankly, Will, I'm very happy with CuriosityStream. And I was looking in their science and technology section in the Discovery app, and I don't think they have nearly as much content as I found in CuriosityStream. So for me personally, I'm very happy with CuriosityStream and with YouTube, and I don't think I'm gonna pay when it comes to, you know, at the beginning of next week. I think I'm gonna, you know, let it go and stick with what I have. And I've got a feeling that that's going to be a problem for them. But the combination of YouTube and of CuriosityStream, which has already got 13 million subscribers and is cheaper and offers download in the mobile app, I think this is some serious competition for paying subscribers. So they better woo those people that are using it for free as part of Verizon, is all I can say, if they want to be successful.
Right. Well, that's the downside of playing in the unscripted world, and that's what Discovery, that's obviously their niche, unlike the entertainment-oriented competitors. So anyway, Colin, we don't want to go too long here on our first podcast of 2021. Obviously, these are topics that we'll be coming back to during the course of the year: Roku, Discovery Plus, all the different streamers that are investing heavily this year. So why don't we call it that for this inaugural episode of 2021?
I think that's probably a good plan, Will.
Good chatting, and Happy New Year once again to our listeners, and we'll see you all again next week.